Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we've got a little bit of news to get to, actually on the basketball front. We'll talk about that at the beginning of the show, and then we'll get into everything from this past weekend involving the Wisconsin football game. Unfortunately for them, a lot of the same ugliness from the previous couple losses showed their head once again in this Michigan loss, so we'll touch on everything from that, including the injury report and the depth chart from this upcoming week as they turn the page to Illinois. And we'll kind of just go back and revisit, similar to what we did last time, where just kind of opened it up and took it where we wanted to go and talk about all different things from that contest, because I think there's plenty to get to in that football game, as well as the Badgers try to move forward from what's been a rough start of the season. So it should be a good podcast to have a nice little venting session for us once again. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing great, man. Yeah, I'm excited to flush that Michigan game out of our systems, talk about a little bit of basketball at the front end as well, and kind of just get things going, and hopefully the Badgers can get back on track for Illinois. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's the big hope right now. It'll be good to purge this Michigan game from the system, because it was really, unfortunately, a lot of the same mistakes and same things kind of popped their head up, and unfortunately for the Badgers, some new mistakes as well. So we'll get into all of that in the back half, but it'll be nice to turn the page and focus on this Illinois game. I know we'll talk about the Chris Presser in that football conversation as well, but he sounded like he had a little bit of fire in him and a little bit of energy to him. So hopefully that means the team can rebound around that and turn the page and refocus for what should be an interesting Illinois game for sure. But we'll start with the news. The big one, of course, on the basketball front, the Maui Invitational, which Wisconsin is a part of, has been moved to Las Vegas, of course, normally held in Maui. Due to COVID and everything involving that, they decided to hold it once again in Las Vegas. So it should be an interesting tournament there. Worst places to go if you're a fan wanting to go watch some basketball. I know it's not quite Maui that you're going to get to go see, but worse places to go than Vegas for sure. So anything to really take away from that, or still just excited to see what Wisconsin can do in this tournament?
A little cheaper to travel, to be perfectly honest,
for
those of you who are going there. But the field's still the same. It's going to be a great field. And I think Wisconsin, it's going to be a learning exercise. I think that's going to tell us a lot about this team early in the season as they take on some really good teams.
Yeah, it should be it's always a fun field. I mean, they always do a good job with that tournament. Yeah, you're going to miss, seeing the shots of the waves and everything like that. You'll probably still get Bill Walton and his Hawaiian get up while he's in Vegas, but maybe not the same scenes. But I think at the end of the day, in terms of a basketball conversation, it'll be good for Wisconsin basketball to kind of, like you said, get a gauge of where this team is at. Kind of throw them to the fire a little bit early. I know they've got some games before that, but it'll be interesting to see how they are in a little bit more of a pressure situation for sure. And speaking of Wisconsin basketball, Greg Gard did speak to the media today for the first time as they get ready to open their season. Basketball is going to be here before you know it. Anything that you took from the Greg Gard presser today? I know neither of us got a chance to listen to it fully, but there were some news and notes all over the Twitter sphere, because that's the only social media network that is currently working.
Yeah, what a crazy thing with both Facebook and Instagram down today. But I think the biggest takeaways that I saw in kind of looking around were the status update on a couple of younger players and kind of where they're at. specifically Lauren Bowman, guy missed all of last year. A tremendous get on the recruiting front that I think fans were really excited about. Missed all last year, but I think he's in a better place this year and, expected to help out a little bit. Tyler Wall, I know he made a lot of big gains physically last year. It seems like he's kind of starting to be one of the team leaders to go along with Brad Davison. So I think that that's a positive development when you look at how young this team is, and you're not necessarily having to lean on some of these transfers to be like, hey, you just got on campus, now you got to be a leader. So I think that Wall's development in that aspect is big. But I think the most notable one is Marcus Ilver. And, you know, we've heard trickles out from the basketball program that he was a guy that really looked good when they got on campus. And Greg Gard said, again, he was a person that was farther along than what they thought he was going to be, really excited about what he could bring. He's a stretch four, or really kind of a stretch forward in general that I think could really help this team out with his shooting ability. And so I'm fascinated to see if he's going to be able to get into the rotation this year or at least push some of the guys in front of him for playing time, because I do think that there are wing opportunities available on this present roster, given how much the roster turned over after all of those seniors walked away.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it so many times when we've brought up basketball that there was going to be a lot of minutes available for a lot of different guys, and there's going to be certainly some competition in there. You know, you look at the wing spots especially, that's a place where he can make an impact and certainly push for minutes if things break the right way. Of course, you've got the familiar faces that you're going to have in Davison, and Johnny Davis will be one that hopefully he's due for a big year. But other than that, you know, how this rotation works out with some of these other guys and some younger guys is going to be fascinating to watch for. So the news with Lauren Bowman is, of course, really huge. I think some people forget how big of an impactful recruit he was before coming in. Obviously, you wanted to see him play, but I think sometimes just with everything that was going on in his situation, you forgot that he's going to be hopefully a really big and impactful piece for this team moving forward, this very talented kid out of high school, and had an unfortunate situation, but hopefully can bounce back and be a piece to this team. So overall, it was a lot of the stuff. You know, I like that he mentioned Tyler Wall kind of taking on a bigger leadership role. That's going to be the thing that I think you'll be looking for. You're, of course, going to have Davison, who will be in that role, but there's still going to be a gap between him as the old super senior type of guy and a lot of these young guys, where I think Tyler Wall would be a good bridge between that and hopefully – you know, his presence on the court, both as a player and as a leader, will hopefully be noticed. And so, yeah, I think overall this team is going to be interesting. They're going to take their lumps, but it's hard for me to even think about basketball. But I am a little bit excited to see what this group can do, because I think we all think the basketball last year, and it makes us all kind of want to bang our head against the wall. But I think this group will be fun to watch and competitive, and we'll have some growing pains, but if they're competitive and playing in games, I think it'll be a welcome sight. So overall, the start to the basketball season is probably sneaking up on some people, but we'll still be some fun with this group as they move forward.
For sure. Do we want to shift gears to football now?
Let's go ahead and hop right into it, because we'll start with similar to Greg Gard, Paul Chryst did his annual Monday presser. Like I mentioned at the top, he did have a little bit of a, I wouldn't want to say spark, maybe a little bit more energy, a little bit of fire to him. He said some excitement. And of course, if you listen to any other Monday pressers across the country, usually they all are going on around the same time. And guys, coaches are always optimistic, and Paul Chryst is no different, kind of always has the cliches that he goes to. But I think he was pretty open and honest about answering the questions that are put in front of him. He talked about that they absolutely need to be better. They're working on trying to be better, and that they're trying to move forward as best they can. So it wasn't, I guess, a presser that a lot of notable things came from it, but I definitely did notice some fire in there. So to go off of that, anything that you took from the presser, and of course we can get into the injury report as well, because that was a added layer that always comes from that Monday morning media recap.
Yeah, I mean, the simple fact that he used the word bitch and it was just like sent me to the moon in laughter, because he basically just said, hey, it's part of the job that people are going to, you know, bring up how this team is looking, and it's a direct reflection on him. And so I think that was candid, and I'm glad that he brought that up. The other thing that I thought was actually very notable was when he talked about that this offense doesn't have an identity. Like, he straight up said that. And I know that that's something that we talked about, and I think that that's really the missing link in a lot of ways for this offense. I think that there's still things to clean up at quarterback, at offensive line, and in offense in general, the backfield. But really, I think right now it's what does this team want to be on the offensive end, and that he brought up that, hey, they've been able to pass the ball a little bit sometimes, they've been able to run the ball a little bit sometimes, but they can't string it all together. And that really is just segmented. So I think that that was important for fans to hear, that he is owning that. But I also think that it's also kind of scary to think that your head coach is saying that about your offense when he's running the offense, and the offense has really sucked this year.
Yeah, I think that was certainly something that stood out, was the fact that, you know, he acknowledged that, but and kudos, he did say, you know, that is part of an onus to him, but that's also like, yeah, I think I'm glad that that light bulb went off and he kind of said that as well. So like you said, no one wants to be in this position. No one wants to be a 1-3 football team. The fans are restless. The players are probably restless. The coaches are probably restless. But I think now it's up to them to really, we talked about, they don't necessarily control their destiny, but they can control and determine, you know, how they want to move forward with this season. And nobody's going to feel sorry for them. There's other teams in this Big Ten West. You know, this upcoming week, this Illinois team, yeah, they got beat by Wisconsin last year on a dominating performance from Mertz. But 2 years ago, you know, Illinois was a team that was competitive and upset the Badgers. So there's all sorts of, you know, you still got Purdue on the schedule. You still got all the rivalry games, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota. So the storyline, they can control. They can bounce back from this tough start. But like he said, you know, the onus has to be on them, and they've got to pick which way do they want to go, because nobody's going to sit around and feel sorry for the Badgers and mope as they try to move forward. So figuring out some identity on that offensive side is going to be a huge part of it. But really, it's just going to be, you know, a lot of them, you know, really taking some pride in figuring out how they want to move forward, because it has not been pretty these first first 4 weeks with these losses now piling up and really magnifying a lot of the same issues week in and week out, which we'll, of course, get into as we get into the game. But anything else from the presser or the injury report? Because I know that's one thing we should probably talk about. Mertz and Ferguson, the two big names, are currently listed as questionable. So we'll see how those guys shake out as the week moves forward.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a positive development that Mertz was listed, not only for available for the media today, speaking with everyone, but he also took part in practice. And so I think that's positive. I do think it's a little worrisome that you have your number one and number two tight ends, both listed as questionable. Ferguson went out just before Mertz went into the locker room, but then rejoined the team. And then Eschenbach, mm-hmm. I mean, he took a beating at the end of the game. I was able to rewatch it, and he got rolled up on. And then two plays later, he ended up catching an 18-yard pass, and it looked like his shoulder popped out because he was running over with it drooping. And was like screaming to the sidelines as he was coming over. So I'm hoping that both of those guys will be available. Specifically Eschenbach, I think he will be. If it was a dislocation or something like that, you just pop that in and it's going to hurt like hell, but hopefully you can go next week. But I think really the biggest thing is going to be Graham Mertz. And if he's available, you also would love to have Jake Ferguson, because he's such an important part of your offense, both in the passing game and in the running game. So I there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I do think that if I had was a betting man, I would guess that Graham Mertz will probably be available come Saturday.
Yeah, I think the media availability is always something that you can kind of at least gauge where they're at right now. I don't think they would have been trotting him out there to speak if they were cautious or trying to hold him back, or if there was a possibility. I mean, there's always a possibility that he won't play, but I think they probably feel good enough. It felt good enough to have him put up and speak in front of the media, so I think that's usually a good sign if things continue to progress well through the week. I would imagine he would be available and be playing on Saturday, and we'll get into it a little bit, but, I mean, that's probably a good sign for Wisconsin. I think of one of the silver linings of another tough loss was, of course, him playing a little bit better in that second quarter. It was a small window, but it was finally something that we saw the Graham Mertz that a lot of people have been wanting to see. So with that, I mean, we've talked about the press, we've talked about the injury report. Anything else you want to hit on? Otherwise, we can go right into where we want to get into this game, and I think Graham Mertz is probably a place that we can start at.
Yeah, let's start with Mertz, because I do think that that first quarter was hell. Like, that was some of the worst offensive football you're going to see. It was really bad. -2 yards through your first 4 drives of offense. I mean, that's just embarrassing. But you saw that things start to click a little bit, and I think there's a couple different reasons. But really, that was probably the best quarter of football we've ever seen from Graham Mertz. And I know people will point to that Illinois game where he did a lot of really nice things. But none of the throws he made in that Illinois game were anything close to some of those throws that he delivered against Michigan. Those were some really heady throws. He had pressure in his face. And he deserves his criticism for the first 3 games. But in this game, I mean, he was just getting bombarded because the offensive line was a turnstile. And really, in that window of time, he made some really good throws. That throw to DK, that 4-vert scheme that they ran, he missed that play. And you know, I called him out for it. He missed a wide-open DK to win the game against Penn State. He nailed it against Dax mm-hmm. Hill in that one. And that was a thing of beauty. It was also great to see Jim Ray DK available. Well, I'm sure we'll touch on that. But Graham Mertz, that was definitely the Graham Mertz that everybody's been wanting to see. And I think that was a positive development for him. And hopefully that gives him some confidence going forward. I know the injury is tough, but really those were some dynamic throws that he made, that first throw to Ferguson, as well as a throw on that drive, that same drive that he made to Kendrick Pryor on the outside. It was a deep out. He got drilled in his face and he completed the pass with the pressure. And so I think those were positive developments for Graham Mertz, and it definitely showed why he's out there and not Chase Wolf.
Yeah, I think all of a sudden you went from a storyline, and like you said, he deserves criticism for those other, those early games. But at the same time, you saw that quarter against Michigan, and you thought, man, if Graham Mertz is out from this injury, you don't feel good about this game. All of a sudden, it went from, man, Graham Mertz is the problem, and he was part of the problem. I think Saturday showed you that he was part of those early season woes, but at the same time, there were other issues going on, and all of a sudden the narrative went to, man, we really need Graham Mertz in this game to not only hang in it. That second quarter was great. They did a good job of I think, getting him confidence and playing well, and he looked great, but also all of a sudden it went to, man, we need Graham Mertz to win this game because he's really the entire offense right now. So I think that's the silver lining of, a pretty tough Saturday for Wisconsin, is that he looked like he's got some confidence back. He showed, once again, glimpses. Now, we'll still have to see it for a full 4 quarters, but if he throws the ball anywhere close to that throughout an entire game, you really have to feel good about where he's progressed to. And, I know Wisconsin is expected to hang with a team like Penn State, Notre Dame, and Michigan, and they did in that Penn State game, and that Notre Dame game was a little bit deceiving, but now all of a sudden you're going to play a game against an Illinois team that has rightfully been struggling all season. You're going to go against some teams in the Big Ten West, or maybe you can try and get some things right and move this thing forward. Not going to say there's any easy games in a Big Ten schedule, but now you're going to finally see maybe a drop in competition, and hopefully that Graham Mertz confidence is coming at the right time, of course, barring, an injury that is probably going to be nagging him throughout the week. But hopefully he's healthy and can play the way he looked on Saturday, because that was a nice glimpse of what we think Graham Mertz can be moving forward.
Yeah, he looked more composed in the pocket. He was able to be more accurate. He delivered the ball on time. There wasn't some of those glaring mishaps that had happened the first couple games. And really, I think that is a positive development. There's nothing else to take from it. Like, he really looked the part in that game. And it's a half of football, but the number one thing for him was there was no turnovers. And that has been just the absolute Achilles heel for this team, has been turnovers. And we didn't see them from him. We saw them elsewhere after he went out, but Mertz didn't make any of those killer mistakes, and that kept this team in it and had them right in the thick of things until he went out with that injury.
Yeah, he really did a good job and hung in the pocket against a tough defensive line and held up against with an offensive line that was really struggling to protect the quarterback in open holes for the run game. So with that, I think we've talked the positive of the offense. There's probably a couple other positives we can get to, but I think where do you want to take it next? Do you want to talk offensive line? Do you want to talk run game? Is it a combo of both, or where would you like to move it to?
So I want to still stick on those two drives that mm-hmm. the Badgers looked really good, because I do think that there was another element that I helped them move the ball better, and that was Braylon Allen. And I know that you look at the stats from the game, and just in terms of running the ball, the Badgers couldn't do it. We're going to rip apart the offensive line in a second here. But Braylon Allen had 5 attempts, 4 of them in the first half, and he got 19 yards out of those 4 attempts. Including a 9-yard run. You look at it though, and I want to look back at those two drives, and he was a consistent presence in both of the scoring drives that they had in that first half. In the first one where they got the field goal, he had 2 key third down or first down runs, one on third and short, the other one on second and short, that really kind of kept the drive going, and he looked good. He pushed the pile forward, was moving through, broke a few tackles. And then on the second drive that Mertz went silly and had those 2 beautiful throws, you saw Allen hit on a 9-yard run where he really gave Paul Chris some confidence that maybe, hey, call the timeout, let's try to score with under 30 seconds. So I look at that and you think, hey, they also had Allen in there in some passing situations and pass blocking, and he did fine. I mean, Ches Malusi struggled very badly in pass blocking situations. But Allen, the fact that they threw that freshman in, he had some nice runs, and additionally, he was in there in pass protection, and he did not look lost. I think he's a kid that could definitely garner some more reps going forward when you consider the fact that they just can't run the ball right now behind this offensive line. Maybe having the 238-pound 6'2", 238 kid who is, you know, Mighty Mouse out there is probably your best bet, because he can move a pile, he can break a few tackles, and so I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see a few more carries from him against Illinois going forward.
No, I think that was the other positive layer was, of course, Braylon Allen being a guy that not only that they got in the game, but they almost seemed to rely on a couple of those runs. I mean, we've talked about him so much throughout this past offseason being a guy that is just a physical freak. So it makes sense to really go to a bruiser-type back like him when you've got an offensive line that, you know, maybe it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but a kid with his strength and his ability to just push a pile maybe pushes that from a 3-yard gain to a 5-yard gain and continues to roll this thing. And I'm glad that you mentioned the pass blocking thing, because that was the one part where if you're throwing a running back out there, you know, early in his career, is he able to pick that up quickly and be a portion of there and not just be a back that's out there to run the ball? Because we've seen that in years past where some guys just can't pick it up and struggle there. So when you're talking about running back woes and pass blocking, you mentioned Ches Malusi. That's been he's a nice complimentary back. He's got some speed, but Braylon Allen can give you that power. And if you're not protecting the quarterback when you're in your run blocking, that's a huge phase of the game that they're just not hitting on right now, and that certainly needs to be better. And, I mean, all of the blocking really needs to be better. But you talk about the silver lining and the positives of this game. You got to talk about Mertz, and I think Braylon Allen is the second one. He's really good, and judging by what we heard in Paul Chris Presser, I would imagine, like you said, he's going to see some more carries. That was one thing he was asked about, and Chris kind of hinted that, you know, you can see it, you can tell that he's a kid that is progressing well and has earned some playing time. So I would expect to see even more of him against Illinois, and I think that's a welcome sign. There's a reason he was so hyped up all offseason. He's a talented kid, and he's a guy that right now you're 1-3. What do you have to lose by putting out a young, talented kid and seeing what he can do?
Yeah, I just really do think that when you look at how this offense is moving, they're searching for an identity. Having a power back who can just get you 5, and he's still got some speed. He can pop one off if he needs to. I mean, you look at it, you don't see Malusi pulling away from defenders either. You don't see Jalen Berger, breaking tackles and going for big gains either. So it you look at it and you say, hey, this is a kid who's going to be able to at least break a few tackles, move the pile, fall forward, and give us something. Maybe that's a way for this team to start building a freaking identity, because I think that you look at how much this program is built on big-ass offensive linemen in a power running game. That's not what they are right now, and that's the missing link in a lot of ways. I know I talked about a chicken and the egg, where if you know that you can't pass the ball, defenses are going to pack the box, which makes it hard to run the ball, and it's going to allow defenses to really key on blitzing. But at the same time, you got to be able to still move the ball on the ground to free up a little bit in the passing game as well. So they've got to figure out something. Maybe Allen's the answer. I don't know. I'm not going to proclaim to be an expert there, but just looking how he ran, there was a difference in what Absolutely. You saw from him than the other guys who were out there, at least in my opinion. You thought the same?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could. And Paul Kress kind of hinted at the pressure. You could just kind of see that there was a difference there. I mean, Ches Malusi does some good things. Jalen Berger does some good things. But Braylon Allen not only does something different, but he looked to do it better. And maybe it's just that's just a hungry kid, you know, aggressive, got the momentum, and it's just going. But it just seemed to be a difference there between what we've seen from the other backs and what we've seen from him. So I would expect to see some more Braylon Allen this week going against Illinois. But that's exciting, because I think when you see that young player starting to progress, you can only hope for more and see more from him as he moves forward. But I think he was really the other positive of an otherwise pretty rough day for Wisconsin football.
You want to talk about the passing game with the wide receivers, or do you want to go straight to the offensive line? Which one are you thinking?
Why don't we go to – we can do the passing game. I think that was certainly something we'll try and get, because I think there was another layer of positive there. So why don't we get all the positive out before we can harp on the negative here. Once again, you know, going to young players with Braylon Allen, how about a similar focus was there going to young players in Chimere Dike, which is a guy that played really well. We both had been this entire season kind of been wondering, you know, where is he? What's going on? When's he going to finally get to not just get snaps, but really just be involved in the offense at all? I mean, there was a lot of times where they were running other guys and Chimere Dike wasn't really out there, but now all of a sudden he was involved. So passing game wise, I think that was maybe the third layer of positivity, is a guy like him getting more involved. Him and Merch clearly had a connection last year that's starting to come around this year, and I think that's a welcome sign, because if you're not running the ball, it's going to have to be eventually maybe dropping back and throwing a little bit more, and finding those connections is going to be huge moving forward.
Yeah, he made a couple of really nice catches, and he was a guy that, you know, we've talked about that he's probably the most talented of the wide receivers. He doesn't have the experience of Kendrick Pryor or Danny Davis. Danny Davis, a big goose egg on the day, wasn't targeted, didn't have a reception. Like, that was pretty crazy to see. But DK really made some nice plays, and that's something I was very excited about. The other guy that I thought looked really good in the passing game was Clay Cundiff. I know, you know, he's not the flashiest player by any stretch of the imagination, and it came late in the game against reserves. But the kid keeps making plays this season, and I think there's a reason that he maybe jumped a guy like Rucci. You look at it, he's had a solid season so far this year in the receiving department. He runs really well. He's got three receptions for 86 yards and a touchdown. Those numbers are even better if you go ahead and add on the fact that he has a second touchdown, I should say, if you are able to count that touchdown before that was wiped out by the Danny Davis block in the back. So he's a kid who is emerging right now, and I think that's a great thing. The other thing was Jack Dunn was not on the field very often, and you saw more of DK. I thought that was a welcome sign, because that's what this wide receiving core needs, is they need their playmakers out there. I know DK was banged up a little bit last week, but he was missed by Mertz on that wide open you know, fade route last week, but this game was a big coming out for him, and I'm excited for what he could put together the rest of the way if Mertz is healthy, because those two, like you mentioned, did seem to find a rhythm a little bit there.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Wisconsin's not only going to be needing for the rest of this season, but you look forward, you know, next year Danny Davis, Kendrick Pryor, guys aren't going to be on the roster, so to try and get that connection established is certainly a welcome sign, and he's a guy that you know, again, you're 1-3. I mean, I think Trimray DK has more than proved that he's talented enough to be on the field consistently and often, you know, not only be getting snaps, but be getting targets. But, yeah, at 1-3, I think you got to start getting letting some of these young guys get a run and really get your difference makers on the field no matter who they are, well, you know, no matter how old they are. And I think Trimray DK is a prime example of a guy that has played a good amount of his career, but maybe needs to see the ball a little bit more. And that connection with Mertz has certainly been a welcome sight. And I'm glad you mentioned Clay Cundiff as well, guy that, you know, has been making plays and, you know, all offseason. He wasn't a name that we talked about all that much. You talked about Ferguson, you know, Eschenbach. It gives you a good, you know, a good punch as a blocker and a guy that can come out and catch the ball. But Clay Cundiff wasn't necessarily a name that we threw out all that often, but he continues to be a guy that seems to be in the right spot in the right time and making plays. And when you're a struggling team, those are the type of guys you need. So I applaud him, and I'm looking forward to see what he can do through the rest of the season and the rest of his career. All right.
I was going to say, do you want to talk to this offensive line now?
Yeah.
You're up on the box. I want to hear what you have to say about this group, because it was not pretty.
Well, I think for me, the question is, like, what does a guy like Logan Brown have to do to get on the field? Because I think that's part of me. I mean, there's clearly struggles up front. And, you know, after the game, there's talks, you know, they're playing the best guys that give them the chance to win. But I just, you know, I don't want to knock anybody on the line too much, but it's like, how can you sit there and how can coaching, you know, the coach, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but how can they sit there and say that when you've got guys that are clearly struggling? I mean, it's not just one or two plays. I mean, those guys were just getting beat left and right all day long. And like the hockey shifts moving guys in once again, but it's not working, and it's not just one little thing that needs to be tinkered. It's a whole almost overhaul of the offensive line right now is struggling. So that part for me is like, man, if a guy like him isn't cracking the field, it's a question mark for me of what's going on. And you know, maybe it's just that they have confidence that some of these guys are going to rebound, but we're now going into, you know, week six. And we haven't seen really all that much from this offensive line. I mean, they look good against Eastern Michigan, but Eastern Michigan is clearly not a very good football team. I mean, they just have not shown, you know, you can't rest on being good against Eastern Michigan, because the other, you know, however many quarters that they've played against quality opponents, this offensive line, a good chunk of the time has not looked very good. There's been ones or twosie plays where they've held up or opened up a little bit of a hole, but this Wisconsin line is not anywhere where they need to be and where they have been in years past. And there's some clear issues that just don't seem to be being addressed. So it's almost like an overhauling problem where it's like, where do you even go to fix it? I'm not really sure, but something's got to be fixed, because this line, just whatever they're trying, is not working right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty depressing to look at that offensive line when you consider the fact that that's the foundation of Wisconsin football, is the offensive line. You ask anybody in, you know, Pac-12 country, SEC country, the Big 12, you go over to the ACC and you ask them about Wisconsin football, they say, talk about the fact that we, you know, pump out offensive linemen. That is Wisconsin football. And Logan Bryce might have a chance to play some time in the NFL. I think he could play guard, tackle. He's got some versatility. Right now, none of those other guys on the offensive line, maybe Jack Nelson, or I would say Jack Nelson probably will, just because he's a redshirt freshman. But you look at their other two seniors on the left side, there's not a chance they're going to have a sniff in the NFL based off of how they're playing. You've got Caden Lyles snapping it super high to your
thank you for mentioning that. Mertz, that's driving me nuts.
Oh my gosh. Like, dude, you're a senior and you've played center. This isn't one of those things where you haven't played that position. Like, if that was Joe Tippmann, I get it. But no, it's Caden Lyles, and he's played a lot of football. And one of the plays, he had the high snap that made it so that Mertz had to throw it away, and he threw a lookout block. He didn't even block anybody after he snapped it high. It's like, dude, if you're snapping it high, usually it's because you're popping up while you're trying to get your head up quick. And somebody blew right by him. It was like, what the hell, man? So you look at it, and I think that this offensive line was just completely overwhelmed. Aiden Hutchinson, he didn't record a sack, but he was in the backfield every single time. And he opened up possibilities for David Ojabo on the other side. the tackles were atrocious in this game. Like, that was some of the worst offensive tackle performances I've ever seen. It was a turnstile behind Beach and Bruss, and they should be, frankly, ashamed and embarrassed for it. I mean, you look at it, it was really bad. I think they'll be the first people to tell you that it was really bad. But they can play better, and they need to quickly. I do agree with you that, like, maybe Logan Brown gives you a better chance at left tackle here when you consider the fact that the shift from right tackle to left tackle for Beach just has not materialized at whatsoever. Josh Seltzner on that play that Mertz damn near died on was not blocking a single solitary soul when I rewatched it. So you've got guys just not doing the things that you need. And what I come back to is there's no punch from this group. There's no tenacity. Where's the Jack Nelson that was getting in fights with Keanu Benton and Jack Sanborn? And I mean, we saw it. There was a general fight going on in the trenches with this group in camp. And right now, I mean, they're playing patty cake out there. Like, it's bad. And for an identity is built around the offensive line, and if that's not working, you're in trouble. And I think that it comes up to the top in terms of Joe Rudolph. He lost his offensive coordinating role so that he could focus on the offensive line in the run game, and that looks like crap this year. So where does the free fall stop? At some point, he's going to have to answer to Paul Chryst further, I think, based off of the way this is trending.
Yeah, and unless it turns around in a big way, I think that's certainly a conversation that will be coming down the pipeline, because you look at, you know, it's one thing if you're a team, you know, if you're a team that has a spread offense and your identity is your playmakers on the outside and you got to get the ball to them, your offensive line is whatever. But when you're a team like Wisconsin and your identity is built on a strong run game behind a strong offensive line, if you don't have that, again, we talked about it earlier at the beginning, this offense is struggling to find an identity. There's your reason why, because the pillars of this entire football program for generations. I mean, it was Barry Alvarez day this past Saturday, and this offensive line, you know, what he built the program on was in-state and dominating offensive line, opening up for power run game. With him in the building, that was one of the worst efforts you could put forward, because, you're looking at the way this program was built and all of a sudden just crumbled down and looked like a shell of what it used to be. And, you know, it's just a head scratcher when you look at it's not one guy. It's not like it's just the young guy on the line that's struggling. It's an overwhelming amount of struggle from guys that have played a lot of football. I mean, that's the thing to me. You mentioned Caden Lives with the snap. That is just it's been kind of an issue all year. But Saturday it just seemed to be magnified that every single snap seemed to be, and it wasn't like all of them were over his head or Mertz stretching for it, but a lot of them were, you know, just enough reach up that it throws off the timing. And when you're struggling, you just can't afford those mistakes. But it went well beyond just bad snaps. Like you mentioned, the tackle play was just, it seemed to be someone was blowing through those guys left and right. Aiden Hutchinson, I can't believe when I was looking at the stats after the game that he didn't have a sack, because, like you mentioned, he was just everywhere. And just the number of hurries that he just threw everything off. And it's I know, you know, it's Michigan and they had – but coming into that game, they really didn't have a front that was supposed to be, you know, normal Wisconsin offensive lines that play the way they play at times, and with that domination and that tenacity, should have been able to handle that line. And this group just didn't. So – I don't know where the changes need to come from. I don't know where you can't really pinpoint the one improvement, but overall this group just needs to be a lot better, because even if you're playing like that, even Illinois is going to cause you issues. You know, people in the Big Ten West, Iowa, Minnesota, even Nebraska's got a good defense. There's no doubt that it's going to go beyond just Michigan if they play the way that they played this past Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm saying it now. If things don't vastly improve, Joe Rudolph won't be on the staff next year. Like, there's no way it can happen. I know he's a valuable recruiter, and he's done some great things, but at the same time, the precipitous fall off that has kind of transpired these past 2 years. I mean, just think of last year. They had John seen come out of retirement and immediately insert himself into the offensive, the starting lineup. Like, that's a pretty strong indictment against the development behind the guys who were starting 2 years ago. So I look at this and you just wonder what's going on. Something's got to change, and usually that means coaching turnover, and I highly doubt Paul Chryst is going anywhere. No matter how bad things go this year, Paul Chryst isn't going anywhere, nor do I think he should, but I do think that he's going to have to make decisions to save his own butt, and that would probably lead to, hey, the guy who struggled in calling plays, the guy whose offensive line and run game isn't working, right? Like, bring in some new blood, try something different, because it's not working right now. And I don't think anything's going to happen mid-year. Like, I know people were calling for Bob Bostad to come in and be the new offensive line coach, which, I mean, you're also taking away from probably the strength of your entire defense, that inside linebacker, if you do that. But I look at it as they're going to wait until after the year. They're going to try to turn it around. They're going to try to make sure that they sign some of these in-state offensive linemen so that they stick around and they'll have a chance to bring them in before they would go ahead and make a change. But I do think that there's going to be a change there, given the fact that there's a demotion and then there's a drastic fall in productivity from the offensive line. And I think that, heads are going to roll if they don't turn this around very quickly in terms of job security.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's something that it's got to be better. You expected it to be better with the fact that this team, last year struggled, but, now the reshifting of the coaching staff, the refocus, you expected improvement, and so far you haven't seen that, and it's just, that's not something that's going to hold up long-term, because you mentioned, I don't think Paul Chryst is going anywhere either, but you need to start making some inroads to get back to the program excellence that you were, and that starts with the offensive line, that starts with the run game. And right now, they look so far removed from getting back to that point that I would not be surprised if these struggles to lead to something like that, because improvement needs to be made, and it's really gotten to the point where the way we're talking about it, the words we're throwing out there, it's really gotten to an indestructible point where if it doesn't improve, it's going to be hard to come back from that. And have confidence that this group is going to move forward. But I think that's a good way to put a ball maybe on the offensive line, but you want to continue to talk about woes a little bit. This special teams group once again struggled. It's a continual issue as they move forward here. Anything you want to add, or is this kind of the same conversation we've had for now years and weeks with struggling special teams continuing to be something that pops up its ugly head week in and week out?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look to another coach who could probably start walking, it's going to be Herring. Because at this point, he recruits in-state. And, I mean, God, just give that to Jim Leonard. The walk-on from Tony, Wisconsin, you don't think he could walk into a living room in the state of Wisconsin and bring in a recruit? But Chryst Herring, your special teams coordinator, at this point, it just keeps popping up. Like, it continues to be an issue. I've said it multiple times. I still think they need to play their best 11 at all times in these big games against Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, bowl games, et cetera. I mean, and they do it in some areas. Like, that's the thing, is the frustrating part to me. And it wasn't all completely on Hunter Waller that happened, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's sometimes there's just crap luck about it in kill situations like that. The ball just bounces away. You get pushed into something. Things happen. But there was definite communication issues that Dean Ingram needs to be louder about what's going on, letting his coverage team know what's happening. And they've got to make changes. Even there was that pooch kick that damn near ended up with Michigan having the ball as well at the end of that would have completely not even given the Badgers a chance to go ahead and score on that Mertz touchdown throw. There was the kickoff out of bounds. You finally get an offensive drive strung together. You kick a field goal, and then you boot the ball out of bounds to get Michigan into positive opportunity to score. Like, it just continues to pop up, and it can't happen. It's got to change. I love that what they do on the punt coverage, because their punt coverage team is, if you look at it, they've got Bull Chanel, Scott Nelson, Jack Stanborn, Noah Burks, Mike Mascalunas, Alexander Smith. Those are your starters, and they're out there, and we haven't seen a lot of issues out of this punt team yet. In fact, they've actually looked really good in punt. But punt return is still a mess. Kickoff return, I still think needs to clean up a little bit. Like, there's just issues abound on this special teams unit. And you know what? The funny part is it's not kicking. They continue to make their field goals, which, you know, I'm knocking on wood as we speak that Colin Larson has looked really good this year.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect that special teams issues, that would be something that you'd be talking about, you know, just based on what you saw at the beginning of the year, but that hasn't been the case. And kudos to Colin Larson. He was a guy that everybody kind of ripped on over this offseason because they hadn't quite seen it. And so far, he's put the ball through the uprights and done his job, at least in the manageable situations. I won't hold that, you know, that terrible decision to kick in that Notre Dame game against him. But, yeah, it's just it's not just one phase of special teams. Every phase has had its blip on the radar, and it's not just one week. It's every week. I mean, we spend a good amount of time on this podcast talking about special teams woes, and I said in our roundtable after the game, special teams, you know, if you make a play and you talk about it in a positive light, that's great, but you should not be spending this much time talking negatively about special teams, because these type of mistakes just should not continue to happen, and it's been a problem for years now, and it's something that I really think when you talk about changes that need to be made, that seems to be one that special teams, is it a huge part of the game? It's not as big as the struggling offensive line. No, it's not as big as maybe a defense getting hit for big plays, but it's still a pretty good chunk that we've seen time and time again. When they make these mistakes, it won't lose them a game completely, but it'll put them in really negative situations to try and win a game. And when you're making mistakes in other phases of the game, you're making it hard to win on yourself to win a game. So I think some adjustments need to be made there for sure. And if not, you know, you're just going to continue to see these issues pop up, you know, time and time again. And they're really frustrating issues that you would hope is something you can at least fix. You know, the Hunter Waller one, that's one, like you said, bad luck. But a lot of these have been just poor execution. And that comes down to, poor coaching that just has not been there, for a long time now.
Especially when you have you only have a finite number of coaches that you can have on the field, and they have Chris Herring dedicated to that specifically. And you also have Melhoff based helping out with the kickoffs or the kickers. So he's not even helping out in that arena. So, like, what are you doing? Like, I'm seeing a train wreck out there, and it's putting the defense in terrible situations game in and game out this season. And something's got to change. And I would think, if you're having troubles on offense, that's a bigger facet of your game. Maybe you make a move there, push another coaching staff member to the offense and help this team out, because it's not working in special teams. And I don't like calling for a guy's job, but at this point, like what do you got to see to make that change? Because it's not working. It just is not working.
Yeah, you know, I wholeheartedly agree. I think that's the sentiment, where enough seems to be enough right at this point, and it's confusing to see or to try and figure out what more needs to be seen on that front. All right, we've talked offensive line, special teams, defense. I mean, once again, we can go there. Good, once again, I think the one thing that kind of stood out, some big plays got hit for. I know some people have talked about that. For me, I almost wonder if it was an issue where this defense is not necessarily fed up, but it's just like, man, we've played a lot of good football, and we're about to drop to 1-3, and just maybe the frustration was coming out on some of those plays. I think that's part of it. I'm still not really – there's not a lot of concerns that come for me from this defense, despite them, you know, getting burnt for some big plays. I almost wonder if there's some underlying, it's just frustration there. But anything to take away from the defense to kind of put a wrap on the entire Michigan game that you know, relatively speaking, was a tough one once again.
I think there's a lot to take away, because I do think that this defense is playing their tails off. Mm-hmm. You look at it, Michigan had starting field position in Wisconsin territory three times. Two other times where they began beyond the 40-yard line due to turnovers, special teams miscues, and things that the offense is doing. So you look at that, and then you look at the fact that Michigan was confident enough to go for it on fourth down five times in a game, because they knew, hey, Wisconsin's not going to be able to do anything on offense, might as well do it. That was the same recipe Wisconsin did to Michigan last year or 2 years ago in 2019, where they were like, hey, we're going to go for it immediately because we trust our defense and we don't think that Michigan can do anything offensively. It was a complete flip in this game. Mm-hmm. And I know that the secondary is giving up some big plays here and there because of some communication issues and a hell of a catch by Roman Wilson on that one that he made. Yeah. But I look at this and I just continue to think that they're just getting hung out to dry. Like this is, they're just in such a terrible situation. You look at the statistics and most of the points against them have come from special teams miscues, offensive turnovers. Like there's only so much that they can do. And really, I think there's a couple guys that I really want to talk about in a bit. I'll let you kind of elaborate on this further, but I just think that they just deserve better and they're just put in terrible situations time and time again. I know Caesar Williams brought it up after the game that he thought it was embarrassing that Michigan would go for it five times on fourth down because it tells them that, hey, they think that either they're going to be able to get it or they just completely are not scared of what this Badger offense brings, which, you know, makes sense. So I think there's a lot to glean from this game in positive way for the defense, but it's still one of those things where they're still struggling because of everything that going on around them and leading to them being in really tough situations.
Yeah, I think like you mentioned, you know, this defense has been really good all year long, but you know, for them to go for it, it's not an indication that they're not scared of this defense. I think they just know that this offense right now just doesn't impose that many threats. So let's continue to put the gas pedal down and convert, because sometimes it's going to take four plays to get a first down on this defense. But when you're not scared of the opposing offense coming back down the field, you know, that's part of the things that you've got to look out for. And unfortunately for the Wisconsin defense, it's hard to be perfect. I mean, we've talked about it time and time again. It's hard. You can't really, you know, I know at the Penn State game, we were harping on some big plays, but it's like, again, you know, they were a team that they played pretty well and they got beat for some plays, but you can't expect a defense to be perfect play in and play out. And right now it seems like that's what they have to be. And I think some of that frustration maybe mounted a little bit this past Saturday. So I think once again, there were some good things. Yeah, they got beat for some plays, but it's just an exhaustive effort where, you know, they were on the field a lot. They were in, you know, negative territory a lot. I think they kept them in the game as well as they could. And right now, unless you start to get some sort of pulse on offense, other teams are going to pick up on it and say, okay, you know, it's hard to move the ball against this defense, but until the Wisconsin offense start posing some threats, we're going to have to continue to be aggressive. So I would not expect that Michigan's going to be the only team that that continues to do that, because you're going to have to push some envelope to score points, but it might pay off the way it did for Michigan in the long run.
Yeah, and I think Jim Leonard is just a mastermind back there, man. Like, even on that flea flicker that they hit over the top, he had that set up. He had everything in place. Caesar Williams just didn't make the play, wasn't the deepest man. He was supposed to be the back guy, wasn't supposed to let anybody behind him, and he froze. They rolled their safety down on a blitz. They had another safety covering the guy jetting across. So they had everything locked up. They had two guys on him, but Caesar Williams just didn't get depth that he needed to, and so he got burnt. But really, a couple guys just really stood out to me. I know most people are going to look at the stats and say, yeah, Jack Sanborn, Leo Chenal, tremendous games. They combined for 25 tackles, and really they played really well. But the two guys on the rewatch that I thought just played tremendous were Colin Wilder and Matt Henningsen, man. Henningsen's going to have an NFL future based off the way he's playing. You look at what he did in 2019 as well as this year, and he's a monster. He's wicked smart, but he had eight tackles and had that big crucial fourth down stop to keep a drive in the first quarter going from Michigan, and was in the backfield all day long with some big crucial run stuffs. But then Colin Wilder was flying around. He had some really good tackles. He was all over. He had that pass breakup that, I mean, if he turned his head and was in a little bit more control, he probably is able to pick that off. But really, he was all over, flying around, making some tackles. Nick Herbig, I also thought, played really well and made an impact throughout the game. That hit he had on the Michigan tight end when it was thrown behind him was a thing of beauty. So you have some guys who are just playing such good football on this defense, and it's just a shame that the other phases of the game are really hurting and holding this team back.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. It seems like that seems to be the way that we kind of ended up every week, is that, you know, this is, you know, this defense is great, but, you know, it's just a shame and a waste right now that this group is not being utilized to the way that they can be, because this defense is a defense that can win you a lot of games if you've got some semblance of an offense. But right now, the other two phases just are not there for this group, and hopefully they start to emerge a little bit in this Illinois game, because they're going to need, they're going to need to start seeing something from these other phases to hopefully to capitalize on a defense that once again is so incredibly sound. Anything else to, or otherwise we can wrap up another episode of a Bucky Smith podcast.
Let's wrap it up. I've got big picture stuff that I want to talk about next week, on Wednesday, but I do think that this episode's already gone a little long.
There we go. All right, guys. Well, that wraps up another episode. We'll, of course, be back with you later in the week to talk Illinois. Hopefully the Badgers can turn the page and pick up a huge victory for them in terms of confidence and morale boost as they move forward. But thank you guys, as always, for listening on Wisconsin. Thank you.